I'm Tom Davis, and we're speaking with Senator James Lankford. And, Senator, you're busy today. You're all over the place, everywhere from Oklahoma City to Bonita and all over.
Yeah, we're trying to get out as many places as we can during the August time period. August is the one month that we don't have votes during the year, and so it gives me the opportunity to be able to be as many places as I can. So spent the day yesterday in Miami and Bonita, and getting a chance to get up to the Tar Creek area and do a really serious walkthrough of all that area to be able to evaluate where we are on that Superfund site in Grove this morning and down in Chelsea. And we've just got a lot of areas we're trying to be able to cover right now to be able to see people and to be able to hear what's going on.
Well, there's been a lot going on, and you've been a big part of it. You went together, I do believe, with Senator Rick Scott from Florida, the person I know pretty well, with a bill to prevent victims when it comes to natural disasters, a transparency bill.
It is, actually. It's trying to make sure that we're continuing to prepare for a natural disaster in areas like Florida or like Oklahoma, where we know we're going to have some kind of natural disaster in the future. To do pre-contracting for debris removal saves millions of dollars in the process. What happens is you'll have a contract happen after the disaster has already occurred, and that contract for debris removal may be 10 times higher than it would have been before the disaster actually happens. So the best thing that we can do for the federal tax dollars is to go ahead and reach out in those counties and areas, put a contract together for debris removal, just keep it updated, and save the taxpayer millions of dollars as we go through the process. So there's some simple, straightforward steps that we can make to be able to protect our own families, protect the communities around us, but also to be able to protect the taxpayer at the end.
Well, speaking of trying to protect the taxpayer, you've been busy calling attention to the debt ceiling and those who want to raise it.
Yeah, it's been a great frustration for me that the reason we have a debt ceiling as a nation is that we're supposed to protect that debt. And when we get to a debt ceiling moment that we realize we've hit our cap, we should debate what are we going to do to be able to limit our spending in the future or to be able to manage our debt. That has been done in the past. Over the past few years, when we get to a debt ceiling, there's just a vote to just raise it with no consideration about the future. My focus is we've got to be able to take care of our military. We've got to be able to take care of the essential things we have to do in government. But we also have to keep another eye on the future and what we're doing in debt and deficit. And this year, we did not do that. I couldn't support just an increase of the debt ceiling with no plan for the future of what we're going to do to actually deal with that debt. We're now at $22 trillion in debt. That is a lot of money. Mm. And at some point, it becomes a real vulnerability for us. And the problem is, we don't know what that some point is. But we shouldn't pretend that it's not going to ever be a problem. It will.
With everything that's been happening with these gunmen taking lives that have been highlighted in the news as of late, we've been hearing that Mitch McConnell has been urged by other senators to try to get everybody back to quickly pass some kind of gun legislation. When it comes to the Second Amendment issues, first of all, what is your stance on it? And where do you stand on any kind of proposed legislation moving forward in regards to the Second Amendment?
Yeah, the recent shootings that have occurred, exceptionally painful as everyone experiences the emotion of that. But you try to ask the simple question, okay, what could be done to be able to stop this? I've heard people say, well, if we didn't have any assault-style weapons, anything that looked like military weapons, then this would have never happened. That ignores the obvious reality that most murders in America, in fact, most multiple shootings in America happen with a pistol, where people walk in with a pistol and they just begin shooting, or they walk in with two pistols and begin shooting. Just changing a style of gun doesn't change the reality of what's really happening. So I've tried to look for specific areas. A year and a half ago, we did a bill that fixed the background check system and started adding a lot more information into that background check system. Areas where we thought were already there that we found out were not. You heard people talk about the fix-nix bill. That was a real improvement to the background checks. That's still going into place as they're implementing that. But that was a dramatic change. Again, I've heard people say nothing has been done for years on this. That's not true. The background check system was just passed a year and a half ago, and it's still in the process of being implemented. So I'm looking at other proposals that are out there to say what actually fixes the problem and doesn't take away people's Second Amendment rights. There's no reason for the millions of people who are lawful gun owners to suddenly be punished because we have some individuals that are doing some things completely irrational in the process. And so I'm continuing to be able to read through and to be able to evaluate and look for what is an actual reasonable proposal.
Now, we have a lot of politicization going on with these shootings as well. The blame game, and I know it's the presidential uprun, you know, for 2020 and what have you, but yet no one ever says anything about the obvious, like Chicago, where any given weekend in the summertime, 59 people are going to be shot. It's just not all by the same person.
It is very painful to be able to see, and you're right. That doesn't come up very often with gang violence. The vast majority of shootings that are there or the domestic violence that is occurring where someone will take out a firearm and kill a spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend or a child. So there are serious issues. Now, I remind people, we already have laws on the books right now. I would encourage more enforcement of these laws. For instance, issues like domestic violence. If there's a victim's protection order against someone, that's already been done, or someone's been convicted of even a misdemeanor of domestic violence, it is not legal for that person to own a gun, possess a gun, or to be able to purchase a gun already. But that's just not being enforced. I spoke to the U.S. attorney here in Oklahoma just 2 days ago and talked about that, and that they're increasing enforcement for domestic violence because that's already on the books right now. If a person is an illegal drug user, that person cannot own, possess, or purchase a firearm. And the person that was in Dayton who was an Antifa supporter who was out there admitted smoking marijuana every day, lied on a form about illegal drug use, then purchased a firearm. Well, we've got to make sure that we actually enforce the law on the issue about illegal use of drugs and owning or possessing firearms. That should be done. It is already the law that if you are a person that is considered by a court to not be mentally stable, then they can remove firearms. And all these folks are talking about creating red flag laws. It is already the law that a person by a court has been shown to be mentally unstable, that guns can be removed from them. But it has to go through due process and through a court. And so I think people lose track of that, but they shouldn't. And it is a moment that we need to make sure that we're stepping up enforcement.
I want to sum this up on a more positive note. You've been working on trying to establish September as Child Awareness Month.
I am, actually. This is one of the areas that should be a bipartisan area, and it is. I work with Dianne Feinstein on this each year. And Dianne and I don't, who's a senator from California, she and I don't agree on a lot of policy areas. But the focus on what's happening for kids and for the next generation, both in education, what we're doing to be able to make sure that we're protecting kids as they walk through the process from domestic violence, multiple different issues, I think is exceptionally important. So, you know, I come out of a background working with students in youth ministry for 20-plus years, and so that this remains a critical issue for me to be able to see what we're continuing to do as a nation to make sure that we don't have an impediment to families and that we're doing what we can to be able to make sure we provide good opportunities for every kid in every neighborhood.
Senator Langford, thanks for being with us on KWAN today.
Glad to be able to be with you again.
Thanks for listening to One-on-One with a Professional, a paid presentation at 1400 K1.